As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Beat. I'm, of course, Nick Baumgartner, along with Brendan Quinn. We've got some more basketball to talk about today, my man. How's your bracket doing there, bud? What are we doing?
I got three Final Four teams.
Okay, three of four, not bad.
I want to say, let me see here. I know I took a few hits. Illinois being a big one. That was not great. Of the Elite Eight, I have 1, 2. Is San Diego State still alive?
I don't think so. I think they lost, didn't they? Because I'm pulling mine up now, actually.
I don't know.
Because I think I picked them to win, and I feel like they did, in fact, not win. But now I have to look.
Alabama.
I got Alabama.
Florida State, yeah.
Yeah, San Diego State lost. They lost in the first round. Syracuse got them.
Okay, so I have 6 of 8 if my Elite Eight's still alive.
There you go.
Not too bad.
Not too bad. I got all four Final Four teams still going. I've got Baylor, Houston, Alabama, Gonzaga in
pretty
Final
good.
Four. I've got, let's see, I've got Florida State, Michigan. I did not have yet, so not bad. Hanging in.
There you go.
Pretty chaotic first weekend there, but hanging in overall.
Hell of a tournament. Jesus.
Yes, and I was like to a point actually where when we talked to David Warlock about the schedule changes months ago or weeks ago, whatever it was, I was like, yeah. Oh, that's probably going to be pretty cool. And then I got to like yesterday, Thursday, as it's Friday as we're recording this here, and I was like, well, this is bullshit. There's no games on. And I was like, right. Where are the games? I'm like, I don't like this.
And so, just having no idea what day of the week it is too.
Yeah, and I also didn't like it on Tuesday, I got to say, because we had games on Monday. And then Tuesday showed up, and I was like, this really sucks. Like, Tuesday was pretty brutal, I gotta say.
It was bizarre. And, like, just, like, wait a second. Is it still the weekend? Is it later in the week? Then you wake up, and it's, like, Wednesday. And you're like, how's the week almost over? When's the next game?
Right.
Like, I didn't realize. Yesterday, I'm like, I'm writing this story on Howard Eisen. I'm like, man, this thing, you know, I wish I had this thing up today. You know, this is not going to be great timing. I'm going to end up like running it like on game day. And I'm like, oh shit, they don't play until Sunday.
Yeah, right. It's not. Yeah, right. They're not even close. And if they play in the Elite Eight, it'll be a Tuesday, which will be weird.
Yeah.
But whatever. I guess next week will be fine though, right? Because it'll be like in terms of withdrawal, I'm talking, you know, because you'll have games Monday, Tuesday, and then the Final Four will start Saturday, but you'll have all the Final Four stuff, I assume, anyway, that leads into it. But
yeah, that schedule will all be normal. That schedule will all be normal.
Yeah,
the Final Four week, thankfully.
But Michigan back in the Sweet 16. That's what we're
how about
gonna
it?
Talk about today. Fourth straight, as obviously last year's was not played. So four straight Sweet 16s for Michigan. What is this? Five. What was the other number?
Six out of eight.
Six out of eight. Four straight.
That's including
man. I gotta tell you,
including the canceled season, right?
That's including the Kansas season.
So it's over 9 years. When you moved back here from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Yep.
And took the job at MLive. And we're doing
2011.
Michigan. Did you start as Michigan basketball on football?
I was doing both, yeah. So right. Basketball was, I was alone on basketball. But right, Kyle and I were doing football together, yeah.
So you were walking in on a program that,
I've told this story. I first met John Beilein in a construction trailer in the parking lot of the old, of Chrysler, which was being, when I got here, I think the renovation had just finished to the actual arena, and the player development center was still like a hole in the ground. It wasn't, I don't think anything had even been, like, I don't think they even had a structure built. Like, their offices used to be at Hoover and State. I don't know if you how much you remember of this, or I'm sure you've heard the stories, because they were, I think it was built by the time you got here, the new building. So their offices used to be like, at Hoover and State in like Weidenbach.
Where that...
which
where
is
that,
no... Right.
That like, little auto shop is?
No. Where that corner, like by the rec center, you know where that...
yeah.
So that stoplight, you got State Street by Glick.
Yeah.
You go up past the Ross Center, and there's Weidenbach Hall there. That little thing at the corner where, like, I think Ward Manuel's office is now.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, their offices were not anywhere near Chrysler
right
at the time. So they renovated the thing and changed everything. And I met Beilein in a construction trailer. That was where his office was. Like, Bakari Alexander and Lavelle Jordan and Jeff Meyer, I think, were, like, basically in this weird bullpen of the same trailer. Not in offices, if I remember correctly. They were all, like, sharing the same coffee pot. You know, like Beilein had cardboard put up on the windows because he didn't have blinds in there. Like this was Michigan basketball when I moved back here. They'd been back to what, two tournaments. So they'd been to two tournaments in the last 10 or 12 years. And Beilein was like obsessed with if we could just get to be like a six seed.
Right.
And, you know, maybe have a tournament appearance where we can be favored or something, right? So, like, fast forward from that till now, obviously, everything has changed, and it's crazy. I mean, if you're someone who's followed the program for 10 to 15 years, and if you're someone who was familiar with that drought that they had, which was massive,
right?
Like, this is pretty nuts when you put it all... And I know we don't want to talk about all the history, whatever, but, like, just from where they've come from to where they are now as a program, in 10 years, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, when I tweeted it that night, I mean, I guess because not being around here, right, for especially the dark ages, I don't even really think about it. It's not part of my conscience. So I tweeted after the game that stat that you just said, right, four straight Sweet 16s, 6 and 8 years, and a lot of the responses were like, man, I was around for the LRB and the Amaker days, and I just can't even believe what I'm seeing. And, you know,
that's most people.
The crazy thing is that, you know, the program has, it's got all the pieces, all the infrastructure to be just a powerhouse, you know, and at least a national player on a yearly basis, right, both in recruiting, both in TV time, both in success on the court, if you can make it work. And you just take it for granted that it's
right,
that all these pieces are in place, not realizing, you know, wasn't so easy not too long ago. So, you know, the transition of these eras, you know, Beilein to Juwan Howard, and we've talked about this, that we wouldn't have predicted it would go this seamlessly, this successfully. Because for a while there, it was, you know, man, does this thing just kind of fade off into the distance? Was that more of a kind of pocket of time, right? So this thing's
pocket
being
of time. That's
being carried forward, and here they are back in the Sweet 16. You know, that certainly they'll be favored. They're favored in this game,
right?
Against Alabama, you know, that'll be a coin flip, but I would guess they'll be a 1-point favorite. So
I mean, they're a one seed,
right? You know, so they'll be they are favored to get to a
Final Four.
Final Four since 2013. And when you start getting to Final Fours and stuff under different coaches, well, that's when it's, you know, that's kind of a sign of ultimate strength of a program, really. You know, it's not Tom Izzo taking Michigan State to freaking nine Final Fours, whatever, where you're just like, wait, is this the coach? Is this the program? I mean, I know, obviously, yeah. Michigan State had success yeah. before him, but I think you get my point. Like, you know, there are these places where it's so attached to a single player or a single coach or, you know, a single kind of moment in time that, you know, is it like, how sustainable are things? Well, this is quite sustainable.
That's a great point. That's a great discussion point to talk about because, you know, while there's part of me that thinks that this is going to be sustained no matter sort of what sort of happens here because they do have, like you said, they finally have the facilities. You know, Michigan's facilities are as good as you'll find, I think, in college basketball. They've renovated the building. You know, people at the time, I can remember when, you know, Chrysler was being renovated. It was like, well, why don't you just knock it down and start over? But they've renovated it, and it's upgraded, and it's nice, and everything is nice, and everything is what you need it to be. And so all of those things have taken care of themselves. And now, and that was the thing. You'd hear that for years, that 10-year drought. Like, why is this program not what it should be? Why is this program not, you know, one of these teams that, you know, I don't think a lot of people nationally talk about Michigan's Sweet 16 streak here because I think a lot of people nationally would say, well, yeah, of course. Like, why right. wouldn't they be right. a program that would be in, you know, have that as something that would be on the table? So you heard that from people forever that were like, there's no reason that this isn't a thing. And, you know, you credit a lot of people. I think that Beilein used to credit Bill Martin a lot for it, but really I think a lot of it was Beilein. I mean, raising the money, getting it done. Now it's there. But also on the other side of that, you know, you've got Juwan Howard here who's only coached two tournament games. And, right. you know, we'll see how he does for the rest of this. But it feels like in some ways they're an established national program the way that Michigan should be. But it also feels in some ways that they're not quite there yet. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like they're right. I don't know, just for me, I don't know if you would agree with me, but feels like they're right there, but they still need maybe, I don't know what that would
yeah,
be.
I mean,
but it does feel like they're missing something.
There's certainly categories here, right? Yeah. And if you look at like the top 10, if you say the top 10 programs in the country, right?
Right.
Programs.
Yeah. Which is a rolling number usually. You know?
It's a rolling yeah. number. It's based a lot in history. It's based a lot in, you know, attractiveness of the job. It's based in fan base, all these different things. Like, Michigan's probably on the outside of that group.
Right.
You know,
because like
you're talking Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina, Kansas, Louisville. You know, at this point, Gonzaga's in that conversation probably. You know, maybe a UCLA, maybe a Syracuse.
I feel like they're right there with some of those teams, though. You know?
Right there, but like, yeah. you know, like, Villanova has three national championships.
But right, yeah, exactly.
You
That's
know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
There's things like that. Like, you can make a case that, like, Florida still is
sure.
above it. I'm sure if you look up, you know, KenPom's program ratings from, you know, that's the KenPom era. So that's 97 onward. And it has a – let me just pull it up here.
And that's when Michigan's drought period – so actually for Michigan, that's an interesting
– Right. So in the ratings, this isn't – yeah. So in the ratings – Michigan's 21st.
Right. Because, they, you know, they had that 10-year...
That's from 97 on. That kind of speaks to just how bad things were.
Right.
I mean, that's a pretty remarkable number when you consider the success that this
program had.
Oh, God.
What would they have been from 97 to 07, would you right. think? Like,
yeah, sure.
90th? I mean, like, that's where it was.
Right.
But, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
But, so the top 10 in this, so this is 97 to 2020, is Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, North Carolina, Michigan State, Arizona, Villanova, Florida, Louisville, right. Gonzaga.
Perfect. I mean, what you would think, right?
Like right.
The, yeah.
But like the difference between the like those programs and like the more sustainable one, like it's like look at Ohio State, right? It had that stretch of time.
Exactly.
Where it was one of the best programs in the country without a doubt. Multiple Final Fours. Dad had it rocking and rolling. They're recruiting all Americans. They're doing all this.
Yeah. Looked like it was going to last forever. It really
right.
did with them.
And just kind of petered out, and they have not been able to recapture anything of that time, from recruiting to atmosphere to success on the court. You know, it's a big jump getting into that next level of conversation. And it's not a knock on Michigan to say that it's not quite there. But
yeah.
if anything, it's a credit to, you know, the last two staffs. And even, you know, I mean, I think you can go back to Amaker and say, you know, I mean, he navigated them through some waters and got them back at least to the postseason and things like that. It didn't work out in the end, but
yeah, they were right there a couple
you
times.
Know, you needed someone to kind of bridge that gap to basically take a lot of L's to make the program competitive again, you know. So I think you should, and I wasn't here for it, so I'm just kind of based on conversations with Bill Martin, conversations with people like that, conversations with Bruce, conversations with people who were around at that time who say, you know, people kind of toss away Tommy a little bit, but like,
oh yeah,
it shouldn't
yeah.
be forgotten what was there.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Somebody, like, I don't know if it was ever put to me this way, but it was almost like, you know, when I would go back and observe that era, because I wasn't here either, but I remember it, you know, like I'm old enough to remember it. But it's like, it's interesting because in a way, when they hired Tommy Amaker, he was still, you know, a younger-ish guy, I think, and a name people knew. But it was also like somebody at that point in time needed to take that job and in any way they could remind people that that should be a desirable job.
Right.
That Michigan basketball should be a job that you can win at and should be a job that you can build at, because that's something that younger fans, I promise you, don't have perspective on, is in 1996, 97, 98, like when we were talking to Jack the other day about Izzo's rise, it also coincided with Michigan just collapsing. I mean, and it was horrendous at the time when the bottom fell. I mean, they were getting just embarrassed every time they'd be, and this was back in the time when, you know, your college games weren't on national TV every single day like they are now, right? Like you'd have those showcase games. Like I can remember one year, I don't remember what it is, I'm sure some of the diehards would know better than I, but I can remember one year flipping on like ESPN in like the late 90s there on one of those like Saturday night games, and they were playing like Duke or something, like a good Duke team, and they got beat. They were down like 50-6 or something like that at like one point in the game. It was crazy. Right. They got beat by like 50, getting just run off the floor, all the embarrassments that they had with Michigan State. And then at the end of Amaker, they were right there. I mean, they were like on the fringe. It was close. So it's been a 10 or 15 year period to get to like this spot. But now this is the spot where I think a lot of places end up banging their head on a wall, where it's like you get to the edge. We talk about this with football all the time, with Michigan football, where they got to the edge in 16, right there. Like, you're leaning over it, and it's like one more step, one more thing goes the way you need it to, and you're everything you've ever wanted. And you're probably established, right? Or at least you're closer. And then they can't get it, and now they're further away than they've ever been. And it's like, I think that you look at it through that lens, and you do wonder, right? Where it's like, they're right there, but the program still, I feel like, I don't know what that would be. Maybe that's a question. Like, what would they need to push into that next group?
Yeah, I mean, it would be a national championship. That's the thing. You know, I mean, I rattled off a lot of those names, you know, other than Gonzaga, other than Michigan State obviously is kind of going back a ways at this point, right, to 2001. Mm-hmm. But all the other ones I mentioned, they've all won a championship in the last 25 years, right? So that's kind of the level, right? The teams that you look at that haven't won a national championship of late, you know, that's where you look at historically great programs that haven't done it of late. So, you know, your UCLA's and your a program like Oregon's been consistent and terrific the last 20 years, but just it's not been at that level to go win one. Purdue, right? Mm. So on and so forth. But yeah, with this program, I mean, And they can do it this year. It's not out of the realm of possibility by any means. Mm. I mean, I know Gonzaga is the big, big bad wolf, as it should be, but, you know, teams are beatable. So
they're not that big of a bad wolf.
Yeah, right, right, exactly. This, they're not the Lakers, you know.
We've seen nastier wolves in college basketball years, I'd say.
And, you know, you want to talk about a team getting tight. Man, when you don't lose.
Oh, yeah, buddy. We'll see. We're going to see about
bad things can
Gonzaga.
Creep into the head. I still think they win it all just because, you know.
They're good. Don't get
end
me wrong,
of the day, when your top three are better than anyone else's top three, pretty good advantage to have.
Right.
So we will see.
Yeah, we'll see.
But,
I don't know.
You know, even just getting to a Final Four, man, and you know, Juwan kind of establishing this as his program, you know, and kind of shedding the skin of what came before him and the previous era and all the Beeline talk and all the blah, blah, blah. You get this sucker to your own Final Four, man, with a lot of your own players. Shit. That's saying something, you know, and projecting forward, you know, they're going to be a top 25 team going into next year too, between their recruiting that they have coming in, between that and, you know, don't be surprised if maybe a couple guys decide to come back here or there, who knows, you know, with these new rules, it's not out of the realm of possibility. We'll see. This thing's built to last.
I want to talk about one thing before we get into what's in front of them here.
Sure.
A little more. So, and this is something that's going to come up. It already has. Jonathan Givony of ESPN wrote about this the other day or tweeted about it a little bit. And he would know. I mean, he's pretty tied in.
Sure.
And, you know, the Juwan NBA stuff, which is going to be a thing. You know, he's only coached two tournament games here. It's only been 2 years. If they make a run, if they get to the Final Four or get to a title game or win it, how are you looking at this? I'm not asking you for information
sure.
on what you think is going to happen, but like, what's your sort of expectation?
Guesswork.
Yeah, what's your sort of expectation of how this might, you know, go? I guess because I mean it's almost without question, right, that he's going to have interest
every year.
From teams.
It's going to be like
right.
early Harbaugh, where you just know every off season
so.
It's going to be a talking point. Yeah, I think it will be. It's something that's always going to be on his plate. I don't think he's looking to jump.
Sure.
I think he's in a very advantageous position where he now gets to be ultra selective. And look, if the Heat call, right, if Eric Spoelstra decides to retire at like 45 or however old he is right
Pat
now.
Pat Riley
like,
gives a shout or something.
Which
is
insane, you know, like Eric Spoelstra.
He's 45?
I don't know. I mean, he's young as shit. I'm exaggerating.
He might be. You're right. He's not an old guy. He was young when he took that job. That's right.
He's 50. He's only 50 years old. He's been the head coach there for like 20 years.
Long time.
So, you know, like, if that job opens up, though.
Sure.
I don't see Juwan Howard saying no to that. But why would it open? Eric Spoelstra's not going to retire at 50, I don't think.
Sure.
So, between that, you know, if the Lakers called, maybe, you know. But point being, he can be ultra selective in the NBA job that he takes if he wants one. And I think that ultimately speaks to him remaining at Michigan here for the foreseeable future and not jumping when, you know, I don't know, the Atlanta Hawks call him up and he's just like, no, I'm not taking that job. You
right,
know what
yeah,
I mean?
Right,
and like Michigan, yeah. he's making just over $2 million right now. That's going to get boosted to, I would bet, a minimum of $3 million.
However
his deal gets restructured this offseason. And, you know, Michigan is definitely being conservative with its money, but they're going to have to pay this guy market value, and that's what it is, right? I mean, the guy, Minnesota just hired the assistant coach from Xavier and is paying him almost as much as Juwan Howard.
Right.
Which is obviously insane. So, you know, Michigan's going to have to step up there, and I've already talked to people over there that are well aware that that's on the horizon. So, you know, he'll be taken care of financially. Not that he even needs it, but
no. But you're right. It's the competitive pay thing.
Fair
and that's
is fair,
the,
right?
And that's the thing I think that they do understand.
Yes, so
I would agree with you.
You know, he's not going to be looking to jump for that reason. So I really think it boils down to look. His son is there. His younger son might be coming right down the pike. Yeah, I've heard some people suggest that, like, oh, he's just going to wait for Jet to come through, and Jet's going to be one and done. I mean, Jet's good. I don't know if he's that good. You know, I wouldn't be surprised, though, if he does want to ride it out, though, with his kids. That's
sure.
That's not nothing, you know. I don't think it's going to be something imminent. Now, if they go win a national championship this year, could that change the construct?
Sure.
Maybe. But yeah, I think he has, I don't think he has any intentions of just turning this into an NBA job just for the sake of doing so.
Is there anything about the college game that you've seen anyway? And I know that he's a pretty private guy for the most part. Is there anything about the college game that you've seen anyway that frustrates Juwan, that the NBA doesn't, you know what I'm saying? Does that make any sense, the question?
Yeah.
Is there anything about the college game that he, that you've sensed that he's like, I really don't like this, or, you know, and I would prefer it the other way, or vice versa at all?
I would say that media obligations are probably his number one complaint right now.
Which wouldn't be enough for someone to quit a job.
No.
You know,
it's
not
just
not
an
that
annoyance,
right.
And
yeah.
I think the feeling is that, I don't know, things that are asked are overly repetitive, or I don't know what the right word is, and it's hard talking about media,
not,
you know, but
not wrong about that.
Repetitive, overly right. simplistic, not based in logic or knowledge,
not focused on what the game or the sport or
yeah.
anything that matters.
Yeah.
But other than that,
There's definitely issues there. I mean, it's been pretty, the progression of this year with the Zoom calls has been something to witness. His dwindling patience with some of the questions that he gets is pretty amazing. So I got him off to the side yesterday. Like, I feel like, and I've said this to some people, like not at Michigan, but just like in conversations, like people have said to me, like, man, you know, Juwan, like, what is he actually like? Because he comes off this way on these Zoom calls and stuff, where, like, he does, you know, he seems like he's kind of a hard, cold guy a little bit, and he's not at all. Like,
right. Yeah.
I got him for 10 minutes yesterday for this Howard Eisley story. He's great. He's personable. He's telling stories, right? He's
right.
funny. He's cracking jokes and all this stuff. Then you put him on the Zoom call, and he's just like, psh, you know?
Yeah.
It's just
shuts it off.
Right.
Yep.
Completely shuts it down and stuff like that. So. You know, I think that's something that he actually needs to kind of address, because it's not like you suddenly get brilliant questions the second you go to the NBA, right? It's just
no.
a different variety of
no.
people. So,
and it's going to get more frustrating as well. You're
and it's
not
82
always
games
be,
of it,
right? And you're not always going to be the best team in the country that everybody wants to talk about,
right?
And yeah, right. So it's going to get that's interesting. I mean, that's part of probably his growth as a coach, but it certainly wouldn't be anything.
I
like,
mean, like the work side of it,
lead,
I don't.
Yeah, right.
The work side of it, I mean, he's, I think it's natural for him to kind of work his ass off. And, you know, I mean, he worked his ass off with the Heat, you know, climbing from a player development position to an assistant coach's job, put in the hours, worked for Pat Riley, who's one of the most demanding people out there. You know, like the having to grind on recruiting, I don't think that's a thing, you know, and it's not
right.
like, first of all, you're also in a pandemic. It's phone calls. Like this isn't the days of going and sitting in the hot box gym on the, you know, EYBL circuit, you know, sitting there watching some kid who it doesn't even matter that you're not evaluating
right.
anything. You're just there to wear a golf shirt with your logo on it. Right. It's not, this ain't that recruiting, you know? So, between that, I mean, I'm sure he doesn't like having to stay at the Marriott in Champagne or Boehner, Banner, whatever the hell you call it. Like, I'm sure he doesn't like having to go to West Lafayette, right? Like,
as much as the next guy.
It's a little nicer when you're, you know, flying into New York or New Orleans or wherever on your
yeah.
team charter plane and going and staying at the Ritz or whatever, you know? Like, it's a different way of living.
Right.
But I think in terms of dealing with the kids, I think in terms of dealing with the coaching, that's fueling him. That fuels him enough to offset the things that you miss in the NBA. I also think he might be a little tired of Big Ten officiating, but that's another story too.
Well, that's always the thing I wonder about sometimes, right? And the officiating and the rules are always the thing that get me with guys like Juwan, because you know, he's a guy who's been in the sport at like the highest level a person can be at, you know, for their age since he was like 15, right? So he's just like basketball. You're never going to tell him anything about hoops that he doesn't know. I mean, it's all... So oftentimes what I worry about, or not, I don't know if worry is the right word, where guys like that, they come back to college or they get into coaching in college and then they open that rule book up and they're like, what in the fuck is all this shit? I am not... This is ridiculous. Like, I'm not trying to jump through all these hoops. I'm not trying to...
Sure.
This is insanity. And eventually I do wonder if that like wears people out to a point where they're just like, I can't deal with all of this red tape anymore. I got to get out of here. But that's a personality thing that's like, you know, that would be something that I think would only wear on someone after many years. But
yeah,
you know,
it doesn't
seem like that's something he cares too much about. So it's
doesn't seem that way to me.
Right.
And that too is, you know, that's why you bring in a guy like Phil Martelli. Right.
Exactly. And that's probably
why you have a guy like Saudi Washington on your staff. He's been doing this for friggin' 15, 20 years, you know, going back to his early days with Campy and whatever. Like, you know, you're sitting at a meeting. All right, let's do this. You have two people there who say like, can't do that. Okay. Right. Well, next thing, you know, and, you know, there have been coaches, like you look at like what Penny did at Memphis, like where he basically brought in a pro staff. It's like, that doesn't work.
No,
man.
Right. Exactly.
You know, like Juwan played it right. Brings in a guy like Howard Eisley, has an NBA caliber guy coaching his guards. And then he also has a lifer head coach who has the head coaching experience. Then he has a experienced assistant who's been, you know, worked under a guy like Beilein, worked under a guy like Greg Campy, understands local recruiting, understands Michigan, understands that, right? Like his staff building was probably, you know, pretty, I wouldn't say underrated, because I feel like people have talked
about it. It was terrific.
People have talked about it, but like, man, just really the I feel like self-awareness that it takes to make like the hires that he made is really impressive and really kind of speaks to the thoughtfulness that he gave to building this thing, right? That it wasn't just, I want to hire these guys who I like, you know? He didn't even know Phil and Saudi.
Right. For me, when I looked at that, and that was, because we don't see things like that. Hiring Martelli was really the thing for me, where I was like, okay, well, this is really different. Because that, to me, was egoless. That was, you are hiring someone who's been a head coach, and, you know, Phil has coached some really, really good players over the years. He's had some really, really good teams. He's been doing this forever. Everybody knows him. He's super respected, all of that. Like, for a guy who's never been a head coach, for a guy who's knew he was going to get these questions about, does Juwan Howard know how to coach? Does he know anything about basketball? Like, he knew that those questions were going to come, right? And, like, for him to hire Martelli anyway and not give a shit about any of that, I thought that was, like, the most... Because Martelli would talk about, you know, when I first talked with Juwan, I could tell he was real and genuine and everything else. And like, you know, that's his personal whatever. But I think as an observer looking on the outside in, for me, I was always like, when he hired Martelli, I was like, well, that's a selfless decision. He's not worried about what that's going to look like externally. Or I thought it's either that or he's too naive to care. He just doesn't know or care. But it's like he probably, you know, but reality is he didn't care. It was like whatever's best for the program. And put it, you know, for a head coach, I'm telling you, for a head coach to be comfortable enough in their own skin to hire somebody like that and defer in certain areas that they don't know everything, like, you don't see that, man. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. That does not happen in 2021, even with guys like Juwan Howard who have, you know, like, you just talked about Penny Hardaway. I mean, he doesn't need to prove anything to anybody. He's been around forever.
Right, right.
But even for guys like that, they have egos. And when he did that, and he, you know, you put the staff together, and you step back and you looked at it, that first summer or whatever, I was like, that was a really good, you know, thing that obviously has been well thought out and everything else. And I just don't think that's something that you see very often. I mean, you hear about these coaches talk all the time, I got to get a great staff. And then you end up seeing what they hire, and you're like, no, you didn't. You don't want anything to do with a great staff. You just wanted people that'll tell you whatever you want to hear and not outshine you.
Right.
Because this is your team and your program. And that's never seemed like the case here, which is, you know, in so many ways exactly what it has to be, which is why Juwan Howard right now, I think, is the model former player hire. Mm-hmm. Probably not just in basketball, but I would also argue you look at football too. I mean, a lot of the cases we see that the former player comes back and he deals with ego.
I mean, you're already seeing all these schools pointing to Howard, and you're seeing fan bases saying, you know, how can we replicate what Michigan did with Juwan? You know, like,
you can't have ego.
I just had the conversation twice in the last 36 hours. Talked to someone from Indiana asking about Calbert Chaney and like, how could Calbert Chaney do what Juwan Howard is doing? I had a conversation with someone from EMU saying, how could Earl Boykins come in and replicate what Juwan Howard's doing, right? Boykins is working as like a player development guy at Arkansas right now.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, you bring him in, right? So, well, there's juice to that hire. You bring in Earl Boykins to EMU. Everyone knows Earl Boykins. Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, it is really interesting that he had the foresight to make some of the picks that he did. Like, I was thinking about it yesterday when I was working on the Eisley story, like how ridiculously overlooked that was at the time, that like low-key hired maybe the most overqualified assistant coach in the Big Ten.
Who's from Detroit.
Guy was playing the NBA for 12 years. He was a 9-year NBA assistant coach.
Yeah.
And he agreed to be a good one. Assistant like coach. Yeah. He agreed to be an assistant coach in the Big Ten. Like, that's crazy, you know? So he's got a guy like that part of the reason I wrote the story is because nobody knows a damn thing about Howard Eisley because we just haven't gotten to know him and kind of set out to write a story on him. But, man, you talk to people on the program and they're like, his offensive mind is at the highest level and he just kind of watches the game and he sees things and he works with, you know, he's helped develop Eli Brooks' floater and he's helped Franz Wagner, you know, make reads out of ball screens, and he does a ton of individual work, ton of skill development, ton of video work. Like, you just don't see that. So, he has a guy who's not only doing that, but doing it selflessly. Like, Howard Eisley's not out here self-promoting. Howard Eisley's not out here floating his name when BC opens up, right? Like, he's here to work with Juwan. He's here to build a program. And he's on his own. His family's in New York right now. His wife, because his son plays high school ball in New York. They're over there. He's just out here by himself, with, you know, $30+ million in career earnings from the NBA in the bank, choosing to be an assistant with Juwan Howard at Michigan.
Yeah.
That pays some major dividends, man. I think we might be undervaluing things.
That's the thing. You have to... It has to be selfless and it has to be egoless. You have to be able to find people who are truly, comfortable, confident in themselves, secure, I guess, would be the secret ingredient there. Like, I've never gotten the sense that Juwan Howard is here to prove to anybody that he can coach. I don't think he gives a shit if he has to prove to anybody anything.
I don't think that, no.
Like, that's not a thing. Like, and I think that we see that in other cases where we see former players come back to places, or maybe they don't come back to the place they played at, but they get a job and it's more about them proving that they can do this than it is the program, you know, all boats rising. And I think that that's probably the secret.
Or it's them as a celebration of themselves and bring back the legend. Let's celebrate the legend. You know,
but
everyone feels good about themselves because Chris Mullen is walking down the sideline, you know, for at a St. John's game where it's like, okay, well.
But it's also not just the former player, right? Mm-hmm. It's coaching. Like when a guy gets a head coaching job, especially, and it's in many ways, it's probably worse with like a lifer coach. When he gets a head coaching job, it's like, this is mine. I've waited my whole life. I've worked my whole life to get this opportunity. It's mine. No one is going to come in here and tell me how to do this. No one is going to come in here and trump me.
Right.
No one is going to out talk me or whatever. And like, that's a thing. And I don't see a lot of that with Juwan Howard. I got to say, I don't know him that well. I we could have blind spots. But I don't see a lot of that, and that's pretty rare in college coaching. Pretty rare, I would say.
It is.
And I think that that's probably why they're at where they're at. But Michigan-Florida State on Sunday in the weird Sunday Sweet 16.
Juwan against the former coach. Played for Leonard Hamilton in D.C.
That's right. Leonard Hamilton has coached every player in the world. At this point, he is always like, well, how old is he now? Like, he's in his 70s, isn't he? He's always like 20 years older than I think he is, because he looks like he's like 45 still. So Michigan, Florida State, they just played, obviously, a couple years ago in L.A. We were both at that one.
Leonard Hamilton is 72.
72. I remember the last time they played, and I think he was 70. And I remember being like shocked that he
signed an extension too.
I probably should have. He's recruiting. They got players, right? So Michigan Florida State. Your thoughts on that one, and then maybe the path that's left here, all things considered, for Michigan going forward.
You ready?
Showtime
on May 3rd. Summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of... There are some similarities with the LSU matchup, just in kind of in terms of what Florida State's personnel looks like. You know, no one under 6'4", 6'5", big, long athletes, you know. But the similarities kind of end there. You know, Florida State actually plays defense, for one. And, you know, they just attack the ball. They send two bodies at the ball. They will throw, you know, 94 feet at you on defense. They will trap you. They will pressure you. They will double the post. They will take away your vision. They will take away passing lanes, right? So, you know, you watch that LSU game. There were some just remarkable plays where just guys just stopped playing on defense. So you're not going to see that in this game. Michigan, you know, it's because of that style that I just described. You know, to me, this seems like a game where it's going to be really dependent on personnel, quick decisions on offense. I don't know how much they're going to get out of ball screens and going downhill and doing things like that. I think it's going to be, you know, ball movement, right? Making the extra pass off the extra pass. It's going to be, you know, get Hunter Dickinson a post touch and that ball has to come flying right back out of there, right? To the next guy, to the next guy, to the next guy, wide open three. Like that's what you need to see, I think, from Michigan. Florida State is really good, has a lot of talent. However, has, you know, lost to Georgia Tech twice. They lost to Notre Dame 2 weeks ago. Notre Dame sucks. Lost to them 2 or 3 weeks ago, whatever. So a good, not great team, you know, but really good pieces. I love the kid, Raekwon Gray. You haven't seen Florida State. You're going to love this kid.
No, not enough.
You're going to love this kid. He's this 6'8", 260, man. But he, like... He'll get a pick and go downhill and drive from the top of the key and go finish at the rim. But, like, he doesn't play over the rim. He plays through people. He's crafty. He's, like, he's a good passer. He's this really weird kind of hybridish guy, but he's just built like a phone booth, and you'll like him. So you'll be sitting there saying he should be an offensive tackle or some shit, right? But the name that everyone is talking about is Scotty Barnes, a guy who – Juwan Howard knows really well. He played with his sons in Florida when they were growing up. He's known Scotty Barnes since he was a little guy. Is very close with his family. So, you know, Scotty Barnes, 6'9 guy who is a elite passer. He's really, really good at a ball screens. Michigan also has a pretty natural matchup for him in Franz. So, you know, we're going to see freshman Scotty Barnes going against Franz Wagner, and going to be an interesting matchup. MJ Walker is their high-scoring guard that everyone knows. He's a natural matchup for Eli Brooks. Raekwon Gray is a natural matchup for Brandon Johns. You know, like, they do kind of line up fairly well straight up. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a great game. I originally had Florida State coming out of this, and over the last, like, 48 hours, I've kind of talked myself more into Michigan. We'll see. Got to make shots. Got to play defense. Got to take advantage of what Florida State gives you, which is offensive rebounding opportunities, which is transition looks. Florida State struggles with turning the ball over. So take advantage of their mistakes, make baskets, advance.
Florida State, were you surprised at all? What was your read on the, I don't know if we talked about this, the Michigan-LSU game was one people talked about a lot and they wondered about, it ended up being a really good game. Obviously, LSU can score. What were your thoughts on that one? Did anything surprise you after that at all? Or did that go about how you expected it to go?
You know how Jalen didn't respond to my text yesterday for my story?
Yes, I do. Did he just respond?
He now says he's mad that he missed it.
There you go. Right. Perfect. So there, you want to tell people why on the
that's
side?
Really funny. Well, he texts that the story is true, so I guess
there you go.
He's admitting to the fact that he backed down when Mashon Leonard squared up on him. So if you want to know what the hell we're talking about, go subscribe to The Athletic and read the story, because it's a doozy. So you were asking about the LSU game?
Yeah, did anything in that game surprise you, or did it go about the way? Because I know a lot of people were, you know, that was a game that was talked about quite a bit, I think. Like people,
sure.
I think Michigan people seemed nervous, I guess, because LSU's ability to score, Michigan obviously being shorthanded, everything else. But it was a great game. I don't know, what were your thoughts on that one? Were you surprised at all on how Michigan performed?
No, I mean, not particularly. I thought they made some great in-game adjustments in terms of switching things up in terms of their individual matchups. Great game for seniors, man. I mean, that's what March basketball is all about. Eli Brooks, Shaundy Brown going in there, you know, scoring 21 apiece, making huge shots one after another. Shaundy Brown checking Cam Thomas, and Eli Brooks kind of taking over at a point guard a little bit, because the matchup just really did not fit Mike Smith's game, because, you know, he's 5'9", 5'10", he's listed at 5'11", but he ain't 5'11". you know, they're trying to play him through ball screens, can't even see the damn court. So, you know, it wasn't an ideal spot for him. And Eli Brooks, the fact that you can just have a senior point guard to be like, yo, slide over, run point, we're going big on these guys. Like, how many teams get that luxury of doing that, you know? No, I thought it was a really impressive performance from Michigan. You know, they took that big swing from LSU early when they were just making every damn shot. And Cam Thomas, you know, just a pro. Some of the shots he was making were ridiculous. But end of the day, you know, not sustainable. He went 7-for-18 on twos in that game. So, you know, Michigan, it was a better team. And I think I said it on the podcast with Dylan before that game. You know, it's going to be Michigan's deep discipline and valuing of possession versus LSU's talent, and which one wins out. And it was Michigan.
Well, we'll see how it goes. Holding together here, still standing. I think a lot of people were nervous, Brandon, when the tournament started.
I know anyone who listened to the podcast with Dylan and I last week, they were certainly nervous because we were freaking out. We were building that baby up to be a... we were just talking up LSU.
I mean, it was a good game.
It was definitely a good game.
And it was one that they could have lost.
But you know,
at the same time,
this one, you know, like, you get through that last game with Eli and Shaundy being your dudes, you know, I kind of feel like this game, you kind of need the stars to shine bit here, man. And that is both on the court and that is on the sideline. Like, the staff needs to be dialed in on personnel on the court, because Florida State plays like 10 deep. They just rotating in 6'6 guy, 6'10 guy, 6'9 guy, and they all have their tendencies and things like that. And when these dudes just come flying in on every stoppage of play, like, you need to be yelling out assignments. You need to be making substitutions to match up the right way. Like, every stoppage of play, there needs to be a level of awareness of who's on the court, what the matchups are. So you need that out of the staff. And then your stars, yeah, I think they got to shine, man. Hunter Dickinson, Franz Wagner need to have, I think, really good games here, and then make threes like usual.
Wagner is just me watching, and you watch it closer than I do, obviously. But he's the guy.
Barely.
I mean, if he plays, you know, at the capability over these next three or whatever games that we know he can play at, then they have everything they need still, I'm convinced, to do it.
Yeah, and he didn't play that way against
LSU. Until the last 10 minutes, and then they won. Right. It was just like you saw it. Right. I mean, you see what happens when he, I don't know if it's a switch or whatever, if it's just something that, you know, it's one of those things that he works himself into the game or whatever it is. But I mean, when he turns the corner in games like that, you can't guard them. I mean, when they have livers, you really can't guard them. Right. When they don't have livers, I still think it's tough, especially when you have Brown and those guys making shots. But Franz really is it's the whole thing there for me. I mean, Dickinson obviously too, but there's nothing. Most teams in this tournament don't have something. You know, they can't counter Franz Wagner when he's at full operation. You know what I'm saying? Like he is just tough cover and everything else.
When he's hitting threes, like I mean, that's
you can't do
that's
anything.
A real game changer because teams still at this point they would. You'd rather Franz take a three than get any leverage and be able to drive to his right and be able to get downhill on you because that's when he's at his best and can do so many things.
Yeah.
End of the day, you know, he'll still have games where he goes 0-for-5 on threes, right? So that's a better option. Now he can hit them, but if you're weighing the evils here, you want him shooting. Right. So. But if he comes out, if he starts hitting shots, that's when you're just like, oh, shit. You know, I don't know what to do.
They have enough. And I still think that that's the case.
But this is also going to be one of those games, you know, I was talking about Mike Smith and the ball screen stuff that LSU kind of was able to nullify just with its size. Probably going to see that again here. You know, Florida State is enormous. Mm-hmm. So you might see more of that Eli Brooks at the one lineup. But, you know, that doesn't mean Mike Smith sits. So he's going to need to find a way to make himself effective. And they're going to need to find a way to hide him, for lack of a better term, defensively.
Yeah.
So, you know, they just don't have the depth to just be like, all right, well, you know, Mike Smith, you're playing 15 minutes today. Well, that doesn't work. So they just don't have the bodies in the backcourt. He has to play, you know? So
yeah, well, I mean, Michigan fans have, like we just talked about at the top, you know, the last 10 years. I mean, they're used to the tournament again. They know how it works. You get to the second weekend and it's good on good and your big boys have to be
right
at their best. And that's who wins the game. I mean, you're going to win in this round and in the final four with the guys that you spent the longest recruiting and needed for your program to be here, not the role guys. Those are the guys who get you through the first two. The heavy hitters have to do it from here. Everybody knows that, and that is 100%. I mean, Wagner has, if he's at his best, they have everything they need. If he's not, we'll see, right? And I think that that's still something that's probably mostly true with Michigan as we look at, you know, where they go here. So,
right.
We will see how it goes. They'll play Sunday. We got anything else here you want to talk about before we
I don't think so. Nothing I can think of.
We'll talk a little Michigan State. Roundup, recap, whatever.
You got any story requests later. Or anything? You need want me to write about anything?
Written? No.
You know this time of year, you feel like you've done every story
everything there is,
you know,
to do.
I don't know. Trying to come up with something.
Anything else? Anything left for a tournament that's being played without you at it? It's not a lot.
Nothing I can think of.
We'll see how it goes.
Write about the transfer portal. That's all.
About to heat up.
That's all anyone cares
up,
about.
I would think the transfer portal, and we'll talk about all that stuff with Michigan State.
Yeah.
In the coming weeks here on the show,
Next week we have a transfer. Portal conversation. I have some thoughts.
All right. How about that? Mark it down, and if anything changes, we'll change it. But either way, that's all for me. Take us out of here.
All right. Very good. Well, be sure to leave us a review in the iTunes store. That is helpful, we are told. So do that. Do so. Subscribe to The Athletic. Read Nick. Read me. Tip your bartenders and your servers. The place where I was born and raised. The place where I